Hey, and welcome to episode number 7 of Circuit Breaker Podcast. I've got a special guest, Noel Guerin, here with me today. Noel has been a hardware hacker since all I can remember, and we've had lots of fun times recently. So Noel, tell us about yourself.
Yeah, hi. I've been developing and building stuff for the better part of 20 years now. Got into hardware about 4 or 5 years ago on the real hardcore side of things, and I say hardcore kind of loosely because some of my real true engineer buddies would laugh at me. But I started tinkering stuff as a kid and, you know, messed with automotives and electronics and rigging up stuff on my cars and everything I could do until about, 4 or 5 years ago. And then I really started diving into it as a hobby, playing with microcontrollers and building firmware and stuff like that, and started learning about board design and really leaning on those real engineers in my life and friends of mine that are true double E's on building out the right proper board schematics and design themselves.
That's awesome. So the way we met is through IEEE. We were talking, and then, you know, Sprinkle was the big thing, and it's still sort of the big thing for you right now. I mean,
we've got a lot of time and a lot of money invested in Sprinkle. We've been building up, obviously, you know, the connected irrigation space. There's stuff out there like the Ratio and some other competitors out there, but we wanted to take a different kind of approach to it and build some really unique IP around it.
So for our listeners, right? So I know this, but for all of our podcast listeners, what is Sprinkle? Why did it come about? Like what happened that you decided to create this cool thing?
So what actually started it all was I was traveling, we were on vacation, and my sprinklers were going off and it was freezing outside and I couldn't turn them off. So it started as a simple relay, ended up being a company, you know, 4 years later. But I just wanted a simple way I could turn off my sprinklers on my phone because my garage was locked, neighbors couldn't go in there, and I'm blasting the yard and it's 20 degrees outside.
So you created a giant ice skating rink for the neighborhood?
Yeah, when the neighbor messaged me, he's like, "Hey, dude, your sprinklers are going off." I'm like, "Oh, that's great. Wish I could turn them off." So obviously didn't have a way of doing that. So I came back, started talking to a friend of mine that's an electrical engineer, partnered up with him, Daniel Prewster. And him and I set out to build a device that would work with any sprinkler system that's on the market that basically installs like a rain sensor, but then can override the existing system that it's installed to. So it can shut that existing system off, whether it's based on temperature, rainfall, or if you just want to turn it off.
And you made it pretty easy to install and pretty dummy-proof.
Like a 5-10 minute install. There's 4 wires to hook up. So yeah,
that's kind of awesome.
Quick. Yeah.
And then it went from there, and so now you have this like really awesome app that lets you have a bigger unit right now.
Yeah, so this year we're launching, actually this spring, we're launching a 16-zone controller, so full replacement. So whereas our first product was an add-on to an existing system, the new replacement takes the old one off the wall completely, wires up, supports 16 zones out in the yard, and that's 2 valves potentially per zone, or a master valve and then other valves. Because here in certain areas you have a master valve that kind of all the water goes to first, and then that's to prevent leaks to your other valve. So if you have a valve leaking, that master will catch it. So to run your flower beds, it has to open the master first, then your flower bed. So right. We'll support 16 zones plus the master on the new device. Full control on the phone. You can control with Alexa. You can say, "Hey, Alexa, water my backyard." Your backyard will come on.
That's pretty awesome. The app and everything else. And then also, I know you're working with cities closely.
We are. Yeah, so we built out a kind of a network of water restrictions. I guess you'd say a water restriction database. So we're tracking when and when not to water based on these certain rules that cities have. So if you have an odd address or an even address, some certain cities will let you water only on certain days. So based on our device and it knowing its location, we can kind of determine what days you're allowed to water and what days you're not, and we can optionally shut that off. If you're a rebel, you can just ignore that field or flip it on and just let it water all the time. Totally up to you as a user, but we do kind of work with the cities to try help enforce that because, you know, water's pretty precious.
Yeah, and then the cool thing is like the cities are jumping on board and giving you rebates too to
they are,
put this
yeah,
in.
Yeah, we've been working with quite a few cities around here. I know Plano's one in particular. I think they offer a $50 rebate towards our device, and if you got it at Christmas, it was $50 on sale, so you could have got it for free with a rebate from Plano. We're working on one with Frisco right now. I don't know when that's going to be out, but we've been talking with them about a pretty large pilot with our new device, and then right after our controller launches, we're launching these moisture sensors. So we'll stick these little devices that are embedded out in your yard, fully inserted in the soil. They'll send measurements at 6 inches, 3 inches, and 1 inch below the surface. And we'll send those back to our controller, and we let our controller know how wet that area is and when to water and when not to water.
That's cool, because you can, since you're doing it at certain depth levels, also for the super gardener, they can know that, like, certain plants are hardier and certain plants are not so hardy and require more water.
Absolutely, yeah. And in the case of, like, a Bermuda grass or something, if you're down still wet 6 inches below the surface, you still don't need to water, even though if 2 inches it's... So doing the finger test isn't going to really tell you a whole lot, so we'll hopefully be able to catch all those different areas.
right.
With their data and be able to tell our controller, yeah, water the front yard or don't water the front yard.
That's kind of awesome. That's great, especially nowadays where everybody's going towards, you know, connected everything and anything. And this is where, this is kind of the other thing, is the last couple of podcasts have been all conversations about how IoT is finally making it to consumer, right? And so, and I've said this every single last podcast ever, which is the running joke of the connected toaster, but you know, there's not been very much usefulness behind connecting the stuff in your kitchen because nobody thinks of that. But now this is truly what is cool for the connected consumer is, hey, I can now connect my sprinklers and do all this stuff to save me money, save water, which is huge for the environment and everything else. And especially with where we are in Texas, California, most of the South is facing a drought in general. Actually not just the South, but in general, we're facing droughts like we've never seen before because of climate change and everything else. And so this is a really good piece of technology that's actually helping all that. It's IoT and hardware hackery and everything else. I mean, one of those things that I always wanted to talk about in this podcast, which was, you know, one, you started just out of the back of your garage, right? So
back at Daniel's garage. Actually, Daniel's got a workshop at his house with, you know, it's like a paradise for electronic hackers. He's got, you know, oscilloscopes and all kinds of cool reflow tools and stuff in there. But it was actually his. I can't take the credit for the garage. It was his garage. It was kind of the innovation spur of it all. But
doesn't. I mean, it still started out of the back of a garage, right?
Out of the back of a garage, yeah, and a couple coffee shops, I think.
So let's. Yeah. Well, one of those things. What are some of the biggest lessons you've learned so far out of starting something like this, and then, you know, starting with like what an Arduino. I'm sure it was either an Arduino board or a Pi or something like that, right?
Actually, we used the Intel. What was that thing? The little Intel board that they came out with, the IoT board.
Yeah,
from the Intel.
Yeah.
I can't think of the name right now.
It's not the BeagleBone because it was Edison?
No, Intel Edison. Yes, it was the Edison.
Yeah, it was the Edison board.
Yeah, so we ended up prototyping with the Edison.
Why did you choose the Edison?
Because the Edison back then had Bluetooth embedded on it. And we wanted a device that had Wi-Fi and Bluetooth embedded.
Ah, okay.
Ran Linux.
so your controllers run Linux, yeah.
What we prototyped didn't. So the prototype ran Linux. The one that we finally went to market with was all full embedded C.
Okay.
On it. It was just a little, I think it was an ARM chip. It was a Nordic chip that was running on it. But the first one that we ended up launching, the prototype for it was built on the Edison. I think I wrote the back end of Node.js, and yeah, it's pretty slick. It worked. It proved its point for our investors that we brought on early.
That's awesome.
So we were able to build complete proof of concept. I 3D printed it in the office, put it all together, and it was the lime green and everything. So
wow. So yeah, I mean, because you guys are doing it, that's the other thing that's really, really cool about you guys is you're manufacturing here in the U.S. I mean, most of it is in Texas even.
Yeah, we worked pretty hard to try to make sure everything that we could do was here locally for us, and that was important. One, being a small company, being able to control that quality, so being able to go there and actually physically work with them. So when we did our first run ever, we went to RCM, we sat down there with them, and we're testing units off the assembly line to make sure everything was solid. We worked the packaging companies here in Plano, locally, to us, you know, working with them on the design. We were in the office many, many times. I think we even picked up stuff and moved it from the shipping guys to the CMs manually, just to save some money. So we bootstrapped everything, because one thing I was going to say is when you get into hardware, you know, it's always a lot more expensive than you ever think it's going to be when you start going to market. Because you run into stuff like, oh, I need my UL license or certification, and I need, you know,
FCC.
There's an FCC cert I need to get for this or whatever. And it just starts adding up tremendously, and you just don't think about that and all your tooling costs. And so it's been quite the adventure, and the first product was definitely the learning curve, and now we're kind of got that behind us. And I think now we could be a lot more iterative on our development, our process.
Well,
that we're doing.
Yeah, industrial design. One thing nobody ever considers is, right, it's like, oh, well, I'm used to like wiring it like this, but that's not good in mass scale, right? So now you're starting to be conscious about wiring, how you're wiring, how you're designing the circuit board layout, things like that, right?
Everything down the man hours of even assembling the boxes that everything goes into, because your CM is going to ding you on putting everything together and packaging things up based on the time it takes for them to package the units.
Right.
So, I mean, everything starts going into consideration. I mean, for us, it was the manual. Can we make the manual on one single page that you fold out instead of doing multiple pages so we can save some money there? Can we, you know, can we buy, you know, more screws to cut costs on, you know, shipping maybe, on the shipping weight? I mean, there's a lot of things that kind of went into it. I'd say number crunching, but some of it was just kind of guessing too and kind of figuring, learning from our mistakes, but it was a lot of fun.
So how, what was, I mean, you've said a lot of lessons learned, but I think one of those things, now that you know everything you know, one, would you do it again? And two, what's been the biggest improvement in time, speed, energy, effort? What has it been from the little itty bitty simple product to the 16 zone product? What are the two lessons there?
Sure, yeah. So still doing it. So yeah, absolutely, I'd do it again. It's a lot of fun. I really do enjoy hardware. Challenging, but I enjoy it. It's because I came from a software background, so jumping into hardware kind of full steam, and thankfully having a business partner that knows it really well.
Right.
There were still things that him and I both haven't encountered before, so it's tons of new things to learn and do. And so, yeah, absolutely, I'd do it all over again in a heartbeat. And coming from the other product into the new product, one thing I learned and one thing that really I think is going to benefit us is we took a lot of the lessons learned from the first product and are able to apply either difference or tweaks coming into our new product. So we kind of knew coming out of building out our tooling or our mold, how we're going to build our mold, how to design our light pipes. Like, we knew a lot of the stuff that we didn't know going into the last product necessarily. As far as building the firmware, we knew certain hooks that we needed to build, the back-end architecture. We already had a lot of it, so we were able to leverage a lot of that. For our system and our products, it uses the same architecture in the cloud, so we're able to reuse that stuff. So there was a lot of things that we already learned or figured out that we didn't have to go back and recreate the wheel again.
That's awesome. That's very cool, especially with the cloud piece. I mean, like, that obviously is huge. If you guys haven't seen the app, you can find it on the iOS store and Android store right now, right? So
yep,
that kind of gives you an idea.
For the first products.
And then where do they find it on the web, too?
Sprinkle.com, Sprinkl.com.
Okay.
So the product itself is on Amazon. You can find it on Amazon. We sell it on our own website. I think it's still on the Home Depot store. So you can check there. There's a few resellers out there that have it.
I'll put that in the show notes for sure. Noel will get that to me in the show notes. So, okay, now that we know Sprinkl and the awesomeness that's going on with Sprinkl, you got another thing that you're excited about too. What's got you excited now?
So yeah, and so as I started Sprinkl, I also had a big data company at the time, which got acquired this last summer, and it was a search engine optimization big data company. We basically go out and aggregate search engine rankings, so we'd figure out where your search results are in Google, Bing, and Yahoo, what page you fall under for your domains. But we were doing it on a very large scale for a lot of big companies. And that company ended up getting acquired this summer. And after that, I kind of wanted to still stay in the data realm. So I ended up seeding a new company that's doing a monitoring service. So it's actually called CrashCart. And I've just announced this for the first time ever, I think, on your show now.
Holy crap.
Nobody even knows about it. I haven't announced it yet. So it's a server application monitoring tool, kind of like New Relic. But it's called CrashCart, CrashCartApp.com. And it's a utilization-based monitoring tool. So you install this little agent on your server, and then you can tune it how often to check your CPU or your memory or whatever, and you only pay per use, so each time it checks. It's a fraction of a cent. So instead of a tool like Server Density or Datadog or one of these other ones where you pay for a plan, you pay $10 per server per month. For this, you might pay $5 for 30 servers per month if you only need them to check the CPU once a day, or if you need to check disk once every hour or every 2 hours. And you get the flexibility of going in and setting those thresholds of how often you want each certain thing checked. And by doing that, you pay the fraction of the cent for each check. It's not per host. I think it's $1 per host. But then you get text messaging alerting if that server goes offline. And then you can set policies and say, if my CPU spikes to this level, send me a text message. So
that's huge, especially nowadays with the world we're living in where everybody's going off of their premise and off-prem for everything doing in cloud especially, right? So
yeah.
You don't know what's going on with your stuff. You're just like, yeah, I think it's up. And then you log into the hypervisor and you're like, never mind.
Yep. So. Yeah, and all these IoT devices that rely on the back-end architecture, you know, it has to be around. And then what actually made me think of this and fund this venture is the guys that had this idea kind of pitched it to me, and I loved it right off the bat because I ran into things before where I'm like, why am I going to go pay, you know, Server Density at $200 a month to monitor 5 servers of mine when really I only need to check them once a day to make sure they're live, and then also I need to just check the disk space once a day. Like,
yeah.
The disk isn't filling up that rapidly, so why am I paying $5 a month for my 50 servers, you know, 5 servers or whatever it is?
Right.
So I'm like, there really needs to be, now with all the cloud-based stuff where you're paying for usage, there needs to be a monitoring or other services that are doing that same kind of model.
Very cool. Very, very cool. And then, okay, so that one's really neat, and there's a lot more stuff coming in, especially, so this kind of gives me a good point when I was talking to you earlier, which was, you know, what's gotten you excited about 2018, and especially CES 2018, now that we're coming up on CES really quickly, so what's the plan for that, what's got you excited about that, and then also one of the big things for 2018 that's a trend that I'm seeing everywhere I read right now is you know, data and IoT are finally colliding, right? So everybody was focusing on IoT as like a thing where you could control your lights and turn on and off and sprinklers turn on and off and everything else. But like, you guys were smart. You guys were the one of the first pioneering ones that were like, hey, we should probably collect all our data and start figuring out what to do with this, right? And know to tie it all in, like you said, with moisture and everything else. But now, with not only what you've got on the first side, which is Crash Cart, which is exciting that we've got the exclusive to announce it, but at the same time, like, you know, with 2018 and data and everything else and CES, what else has got you excited? I mean, you're the quintessential hacker. I mean, you've even hacked your TVs and your other stuff at home too, right? You created your own like cool little thing with
yeah,
Harmony and stuff.
Yeah, so I think we were talking. I think I created a device for our Harmony remote to turn on our cooling fans in our entertainment center. When I started watching TV and when I stopped watching TV, it's got a little IR receiver that gets a signal, uses a MOSFET to flip on USB fans and cools everything in there while we're watching TV. And then when we turn it off, it kills everything off. You know, I think coming out of CES this year, I think there's going to be a lot of, like you said, there's a lot of collision between IoT and kind of the data play itself. But I also think augmented reality and some of these other things are going to start kind of playing a factor. There's a lot of things around machine learning now that are kind of seeing this coming to light with these other devices, facial recognition, stuff like that. So I think there's going to be smart door locks coming out that do facial recognition. I think they're going to have some really neat device around that.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing is, speaking of smart door locks, one of the things that's like got us really interested is doorbells, right? So like Amazon just bought Blink, I think. Ring's the other big one. Then there's, you know, this new Chinese one that's like $20 that's for a smart doorbell that just got announced. Yeah, there's some crazy stuff going on right there with the doorbell and the facial recognition and everything else. So yeah, you're totally right. I think machine learning is now coming about. And the bigger thing I think people don't realize, and I'm curious to hear your opinion on this, is how much it takes for machine learning to become finally effective, right? So this entire time, we've been collecting the data. We've been giving that data to something that's machine learning. So machine learning doesn't, for most of the audience, I mean, I've got some smart people, but, you know, we're still learning our way through this. And I think even we're learning our way through this. Machine learning doesn't just work right out of the box. You have to make it learn for a little bit. It's like a child.
Yeah, you got to set up your training data and your models and start letting it train itself. And well, you train it, you push your data into it with the models, and then it starts training and learning based on what you're feeding it.
Right. And so now I think we finally got it to the point where it's learned. Right. And so now what? Like, what are we're finally seeing that collision, right? Yep. And so that's the cool part. So what do you think is going to be the biggest breakthrough now that machine learning is finally like learned, so to speak, and it's not become Skynet yet?
Sure. No. I think, you know, one, for coming from us in the connected IoT lawn space, is one, and the one thing we're taking advantage of it for is we're trying to build a full autonomous lawn, so you don't have to worry about your lawn care. We know when to water, we know when not to water, and we can do it all automatically for you. So you don't have to go out to your garage and set a schedule. You don't have to go out and turn it off when it's cold outside. You don't have to go turn it off when it's raining. We're going to handle all that automatically for you, and we're going to use that data that we've collected, and along the lines, our real-time readings from our sensors to start figuring out when and when not to do that.
Right.
And then going further from that, using this machine learning, pulling in this weather data and trying to track storms is kind of next on our horizon is, okay, I see the storm that's starting to build over here in the east. And I know in about 9 hours it's going to hit our location. It's dumping rain. Shutting my system off that day before it reaches us, which is better than the forecast that the rain or that the news gives here. Okay, there's a 30% chance it's going to rain, but then I get, you know, 5 inches of rain. So being able to actually track those storm clouds and saying, okay, well, I know Texas is really sporadic with its storms. You get a cloud here and there, and it's, you know, it could be raining on this side of town and on the other side of town.
Or literally across the street. I've seen that happen.
But being able to track that storm and say, okay, well, it's coming my direction up until, like, shut it off and then start turning the system back on as it starts getting out of your way. So if the storm starts veering off to the south or whatever, it's not going to hit you. Turn your sprinklers back on. Let them water. Keep them shut off as long as it's heading your direction, it's dumping rain. So you're basically checking forecast for the route of the storm as it comes in real time and trying to track it that direction. So you could be checking the forecast in Louisiana, in Texas, and then tracking it, you know, as it gets closer city by city to see if it's actually raining in those areas.
That's kind of
bad. So I think once we figure out, then we can save thousands of gallons of water, because a lot of times, like for me, I would water at like 8 a.m., but there'd be a storm brewing in Oklahoma. You could see it covering the map that's heading south. My system would water, I'd water for 3 hours, and then it would rain 2 inches that night, which is just a complete waste.
Yeah, we need that water back again, and we can use it for something much better.
And there's financial savings to it, too. Yeah. I mean, that was probably $5 or $10, which isn't huge, but if you add that up over the summer, that could have been, you know, $200, $300.
Yeah, so, you could fill your pool up with it instead.
So yeah, there's a lot. You could brew craft beer with it instead.
There you go. That's a lot. All the breweries.
Things.
Yeah,
a lot better things you can do with that water.
This is true. So yeah, that's really cool. So Sprinkle is clearly going well. Outside of the 16 zone controller, what else has got you excited?
We got the moisture sensor. I think the partnerships and things we've got kind of on the horizon with some other vendors that are out there. And then coming up with our next tool, next line of products, we're going to take some of the stuff we're doing now. We're going to start building out some more cellular side products, so building things with cell modems in them.
Yeah. And
moving to agriculture. So the next move would be going to big IoT, industrial, ooh, agriculture stuff.
So wineries, maybe, especially now that like the fires have decimated. Unfortunately, and I genuinely do feel like terrible about like the Napa Valley wineries and stuff. But on the flip side, is there's been. The previous two guests have all talked about, you know, IoT going into Napa Valley now, right? So
yeah,
that's a
it's
huge
funny
part of it.
I had this idea, guys, 10 years ago to build sensors for vineyards. And I didn't even think it's funny how life comes full circle. I'm like, I thought about it back then. I'm like, yeah, I was going to do it. I did some research. There was some company that was already doing it. I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to do it. But I can't say we're not going to end up there within the next year or two. So it's kind of funny how life kind of circles back around. So we can take all that IP and all that tech we've already built and apply it to more of an industrial application. We've already got our portals, we've got our dashboards, we've got our hardware. Now it's just a matter of tooling things a little differently and then deploying it. So we're kind of building that ecosystem and getting it ready for the bigger wide scale kind of launch.
So that brings up another good point. You know, one of the things that you learned, and I think, you know, we've said it over and over again, but it's like one of those things where you say it over and over again until it sinks in, which is, how long did it take you to build Sprinkle? Like, what was the total time to get to where you are today? I mean, it's been
a lifetime. No, it feels like a long time. It's really been, we've gone full steam for 3.5 years.
That's still a pretty significant amount of time.
Yeah, we invested a lot of time. There's been a significant amount of money invested in it too. It takes a lot of work to get there, right, with a hardware product. If it's a software product, I mean, really being a software guy, I could bang out a software application pretty quickly. But being hardware, there's a lot of moving parts, a lot of people to interact with, especially if you're building one with IP, protected IP, so you're filing patents and you're doing all the patent stuff and put together the documentation for the patents and the mechanical diagrams and everything else. I mean, there's just a lot of moving pieces that have to take place, so that stuff just takes time. There's really no way to fast roll it.
That's huge. So, like, what? Let's say development time was probably, like, what, 2 years? And then lab time was probably, like, at least 8 months on that stuff.
On our first product, we did pretty well. We built it and had it in Home Depot within 10 months.
Wow. That's rocket fast.
From idea to in the stores in 10 months.
That's super ridiculously fast, including FCC and UL testing and everything?
Luckily, the chip already had FCC certs, so we just did UL.
Okay, that's crazy. So that's another lesson learned, right? Is
yeah, you'll pay a little extra, but buy a chip that has an FCC license already on it if you can. Some of the stuff we're doing now doesn't have a FCC license on it, so that's part of our IP is building those out.
That's crazy. That's super crazy.
But yeah, it's been a heck of an adventure.
And then okay, so here's another thing that you know, finally, I think it's IoT last year. And I say last year, even though we're still kind of in 2017, but by the time this gets posted, it'll be New Year's Eve-ish. You know, LoRa is coming about, and all these, like, wireless radio sensors that are not necessarily cellular or Wi-Fi or Bluetooth or anything else, right? It's like Zigbee, Z-Wave stuff is, okay, that's one thing. That's shorter range and still kind of like Bluetooth. But true LoRa sensors, that's where you're going with commercial and everything
sure,
else.
Yeah.
So what's got you excited about LoRa? Which
obviously the distance, right? But what doesn't have me excited is the power draw. So we're in between a rock and a hard place on some of our design work because we're building stuff for super low power draw but with maximum distance. So it's been an interesting challenge to solve, but I think we're on the tip of it.
Oh, that's exciting. That's really cool.
We've been proving out some really cool stuff, and I think, you know, eventually when we go to the big agriculture space, there'll be some additional hardware that we'll have to develop to help us get that large range. We're talking hundreds of acres and being able to manage that. But line of sight stuff, it's pretty easy. It's when you start dealing with trees and grass and hills and stuff like that makes it a lot more challenging.
Right, and what people don't realize, we talk about it, but especially in your space, right? The biggest challenge you have is usually you're dealing with, like, what, 2.4 gigahertz but you're also dealing with water. 2.5 gigahertz and water do not get along.
Right.
So yeah. that cuts massively.
Yeah, the water's not, I mean, for like our sensors that are embedded in the ground, I mean, it's the boards itself's fully potted. It doesn't leak. I mean, it's not leaking, but it's
attenuating your signal.
Oh, yeah. No. So on that side of the fence, so our thing hangs on top of it all. So our device, how do I put this? So our antenna actually sits on top of our device. So for the controller side of it, it's in a garage. There's nothing out there that's going to block that from your Wi-Fi. Connect to your Wi-Fi. If your Wi-Fi can reach your garage, you're good to go. For our sensors that are sitting out in the lawn, our sensors are designed on top, or our antennas are designed on top of our sensors, so they're the flatmost part of it all. If it got completely hosed in water, covered in water, then yeah, it could affect the length of the radio. But other than that, I don't think there's going to be a huge drawback. We've tested instead of a cooling chamber, a freeze chamber, and then basically sticking it in water. We did all kinds of really cool experiments. Even an oven, I think we heat tested it. So it's been, I always say, Daniel, you're like the mad scientist because he's always got some kind of crazy experiment going on with our stuff.
That's awesome. So, okay, speaking of experiments and all sorts of crazy experiments, what's your current home project you're up to? What's your favorite tinkering stuff? Did you do anything over the holidays?
Did not make the cool dancing lights? Kind of sad to say, no. I actually paid somebody to do my lights, and then then I stuck one of those old school analog timers.
Come on, you're like, you've hacked your home theater system, and then you're like, no.
I was gonna stick one of the smart plugs on it just so at least I could control my phone and shut it off, but it's in one of those outdoor waterproof boxes and the smart plugs won't fit in the box, so I'm like, I just stuck an old school timer off a little tiny extension cord on it and just was done with it. Next year maybe something more exciting, I don't know. Lately at the house, honestly, after I'm going and cooling down from working on the company stuff all day long, I really don't have the drive right now to do any projects. Although, I just told my wife the other day that I'm going to go back out in the shop here pretty soon and start building a new controller for our garage because I'm tired of our garage door openers.
Yeah, so, that's next on my list. That's the biggest one. I even would love to have, because I've looked at...
I got the board design. I just need to finish it. I write the firmware and mount the components. But I built one for a three-car garage that can control each garage door, and then it's got sensors that read the door positions and all that good stuff. I just haven't finished it yet. So I started, bought all the stuff to build the prototypes, just never went.
I'll be another beta tester for you.
Yeah, and I was going to build out the little app for it and everything, so I just haven't got there yet.
There's no good garage door opener out there that exists.
Genie makes an add-on. It's like $100, but I haven't tried it, and I think I'd have to... I don't think it does the sensors on the door position. So for me, I want to know, is it open and closed? And I want to close it and control it. I don't just want to be able to open and close it. I want to know, is it closed at night? I want to hook that back into my Alexa so I can say, Alexa, is the door closed? So I don't have to go outside. Or I can check my app.
So I know Chamberlain does it.
Okay.
Chamberlain's is smart enough. It's got, like, some more smarts to it. I don't know about the Alexa control on Chamberlain. But the funny part is there's not many Chamberlain units out there from what I can tell, and Genie's like the bigger market share.
Genie has a retrofit, so theirs should work with any garage door. So all it does is just make a contact between the two different contacts on the back of it. It's just a relay. Because I was able to jack mine around with it, just a switch. I wired in a new switch, and that's all it does is it just crosses the two.
Yes, so but the new
the
ones.
Common, I guess, to the...
The new ones. Check out the new garage door openers. Because the new ones, even the one I... So... My garage door opener is, the motor was from like 1980 something, so it finally died, I think, year before last. So I finally replaced it like 20 something years later, right? The remote that goes on the wall has actually got a full circuit board in it, and it's got smarts to it. What I do know is it rotates the code on that. The button, too. For whatever reason, it rotates the button. I don't know why. Huh. Or it rotates the code. It's got the IntelliCode system in it. So, for whatever reason, that also is got some smarts into it, so you cannot just put a regular wall switch on it.
Also, the rolling code.
Yeah.
It should still have the terminals in the back. I'd check the terminals
in the back, but that's what I'm saying is, like, even if I tried to just short it, it wouldn't move it. You had to plug in the
module.
The button that came with it. So, it's got some smarts to it.
Interesting.
So, the Genie one has to have their own little Genie system. Now, the Genie retrofit that goes on mine, and again, this is like one of those things where the modern ones are a little bit different than the older ones.
Right. Yeah, I don't know.
But,
I was playing around with mine, so I was able to jumper mine and make it click over and close. So I'm like, good enough for me. Throw a little MOSFET on it and be done.
Yeah, exactly right. That's the easier way. That's exciting for 2018.
Yeah, if I can get it built. It's on the roadmap. I don't know if I'll be able to get to that one.
So that's where Sprinkle's going next. Is they're going to take over your whole garage. You're going to have, they started with the sprinkler system.
The idea of this new controller is we're calling it the smart hub, right? So, like, we see it as you have your smart things for inside the house. We want to be the backyard and the garage.
Yeah, because you got the lawn stuff going on. You got the fireplace. You got all the rest of the stuff.
The next thing we're looking at is rolling out landscape lighting. So being able to control your lens. Because all it is a timer. Yeah. You're throwing on lights. So control landscape lighting in the backyard. So you can save for the zone. Throw these spotlights on this tree. Or throw these pathway lights on.
Or turn stand on.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, there's a lot of things that we can kind of take to the, or mosquito misters, anything like that in the backyard.
Yeah, now summer's coming back soon, hopefully.
Absolutely. Yeah, maybe in 3 months, 4 months.
Or 2 weeks, knowing Texas.
Yeah, it is Texas. Yeah, you got a good point, Adam. You never know. So that's kind of where we want to take the product itself. So it's exciting seeing it kind of all evolve now.
Yeah.
We're wrapping up our apps. We just submitted our new Smart Hub app to the App Store. Getting ready to release our first run for the new controller in January, and then we're going to go full steam production probably late January, early February.
That's exciting. That's super exciting. Okay, so we're about out of time. Where can people find you online? Instagram, Twitter,
Instagram. I do have a Twitter account. It's pretty boring. I do hop on there every now and then. It's just @ngarin, and then I'm also on LinkedIn.
Okay. Right on. So I will put those in the show notes.
That's great.
Thank you so much for your time again.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's exciting. We're going to announce this on the first end of the year. It's the first thing everybody's going to hear in the new year, or the beginning of the end of the year.
Awesome. Cool. Thanks, Adam. Appreciate it.
Thanks.